Good morning. This is Focus 580, our morning telephone talk show. My name is Jack Brighton, sitting in for your regular host, David Inge. Very glad you can listen today. Our producers, by the way, are Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal, and Jason Croft is at the controls. During this hour, Focus 580, we'll talk about gender and communication, and in particular, what birth stories say about our ideas about gender communication, women, the role of women in the healthcare system, a variety of issues we will talk about. Our guest is Helen Sturk. She's professor of communication, arts, and sciences at Calvin College. And she's here visiting the campus of the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, to give some lectures at some classes and talk with people about a variety of things related to her. Helen Sturk is also author of several books, including Gender and Applied Communication Contexts, Who's Having This Baby? Perspectives on Birth Narratives, Differences That Make a Difference, and After Eaton, Meeting the Challenge of Gender Reconciliation. Her research concern, obviously, is gender and communication. We'll talk about that and about women's birth stories and a project that she's been involved in during this hour of the show. As we talk with Helen Sturk, we invite you into the conversation. All you have to do is pick up the telephone, the number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. So if you're outside the 217 area code, use the toll-free line and we'll pick up the tab for the call. And Professor Sturk, thanks so much for being here.
Well, thanks for having me. Good to be here.
I wonder, maybe we could talk to start with, have you talk about this research project, the birthing project.
Yeah. Well, about, quite a while ago, about 15 years ago, I started thinking that the kind of work I was doing, which was analyses of rhetoric that was used against women, was really draining me emotionally. And I thought, it's time for me to pay attention to something that women do very well, giving birth. And so I put together a sabbatical proposal. I was teaching at Marquette University at the time. And the proposal was to travel around the country and interview women about their birth experiences and just see what kinds of themes came through and what kinds of experiences that people had. And I thought this would be kind of a good, fun, low-key project. And as I did it and as I talked, I realized that I was still going to have to be doing analyses of things that were harmful to women as well as positive for women. But it's really been a rich source of research for me, and so good to hear women talk about having babies because they love them and they love the experience.
And just hearing all the stories.
Oh, man. I think I talked to slightly over 100 women myself, and then I had several other interviewers who contributed about 30 interviews, and most of these are in an archive at Marquette University, and you can go in and read them if you want, down in the basement of the Memorial Library there. And as I talked with them, I heard stories about multiple births, because most of them had at least two, maybe three children, and it was amazing to me about how clearly they remembered the birth stories, even ones that had happened a long time ago. Mm-hmm. The oldest woman who was interviewed was 96, and she had so many details in her birth stories, and she had had five children. And I thought, how wonderful is this, that births that happened 60, 70 years ago, she could remember very clearly.
Well, let's talk about what these stories reveal, because I imagine that, I'm just speculating, I haven't read these archives, but over time maybe things have changed, or were there patterns that emerged? What was your impression of this?
Well, I noticed two really crucial patterns, and I call them a pattern of medical model and a midwifery model. And a medical model really takes the baby as the central player or concern in the birth situation and says whatever is safe and good for the baby is what should be done. And that is really a rhetoric that runs so much of the medical care that we get, especially here in America, just generally speaking. The midwifery model is a model that takes the birthing mother as the central character, the one who should be happy. And actually, in the Netherlands, that still is the case just overall, that the mother is the key person of interest. And their idea is if the mother is happy, the baby is happy.
You mentioned the Netherlands, and I imagine, was most of this research conducted in the United States or all of it, or what?
Yes, it was. Although here's a funny kind of artifact. The research, you know, we like to believe that people are all objectively and neutrally chosen and selected. And the truth is there's kind of a snowball method that a lot of researchers use to get people to talk to. Mm-hmm. And when I was in Florida, I was staying with my parents, and my mom, who's Dutch, put me in touch with a lot of her friends. And I interviewed women who had given birth in the Netherlands, Canada, New York, Florida, and the Philippines.
Wow.
All this little cluster of my mom's friends.
And did that reveal differences from their stories? What kind of differences?
You know, it still was the same thing. You know, either their experience was one that validated them as a human being, an experience that they were listened to and partnered with and carefully guided through the birth experience so that they could give birth to a baby, or they were managed. They were managed by someone who told them how long they were supposed to be in labor, and after X number of hours, it would turn into a cesarean delivery no matter what they said. And even all over the world, that's still what you find out. In America, I think we are more enamored of the medical model than almost anywhere else on the planet, though.
In describing these as the medical model and the midwifery model, you also read at least a chapter of your book on this that talked about a culture of control rather than of care.
Yeah. And in the medical model, that's what it's about. It's doing things that can be predicted. So you have kind of a scientific paradigm out of which you operate, that if something can be replicated and can be predicted, then that's a good thing. Now, the truth of the matter is, even though there is much that is similar in every woman's experience of birth, in every case, there's a baby inside and it gets outside one way or the other. Mm-hmm. Also, the truth is that every birth is different and every birth is distinctive and unique. And a culture of care is going to be one that says, you are not one of a million people giving birth. You are you giving birth.
Do you want to maybe share some of the stories to illustrate the points that we've been talking about?
Yeah, I've got in the book that you're referring to, Who's Having This Baby, I talk about four different stories, and they're all really interesting and fun. But I'm going to just focus on one of them. One of the women that I talked to had two distinctly different birth experiences. In the first one, it was highly managed. She was medicated throughout, given a tranquilizer, which slowed down her birth experience, given an epidural, which slowed her down even further. And when it was time for her to give birth, and this was in the 1970s, you know, so she was talking about a birth at that period of time, her arms were strapped out in kind of a crucifix fashion, if you can imagine that. And the doctor said he didn't want her to contaminate the sterile area. All right. So he strapped her down and he pulled the baby out. And then when the baby was born, he sewed her up because he'd cut her in order to get the baby up. And he said that he was going to sew her a little bit tight in an extra love knot, is what he called it. So he sewed her tighter. And then over the next few months, she didn't heal very well, and sex was very difficult for her. And when she talked to her doctor about it, he said, well, you probably should just relax, have a little glass of wine, and that'll take care of it. She was furious because she was having problems because of what he did to her.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't. She said, I wasn't a virgin. You know, a glass of wine was not necessary. And the scarring and all of that just, it influenced her life for years afterwards. Okay, so then she got pregnant again, and she found a different doctor. It was still a doctor, but he operated out of a midwifery model. And I should make this clear. You don't need to be a midwife to act like one. And this doctor helped her to be a real partner all the way through it. And what he did is when the baby was coming out, he said, do you want to bring this baby into the world? And she said, well, yes. She was scared, but she said yes. And he encouraged her to put her hands down and to hold the baby's head and guide the baby out of her body. And she said she had kind of a two-layered experience of that, because, of course, she was remembering her first birth, where she was strapped away so she couldn't possibly touch her baby, and her second birth experience where she was encouraged to be part of that. And she told me that she thinks her relationships with her children has reflected the births. And the relationship with the first child has always been somewhat difficult and distant. And she says, you know, I think there's some deep anger in me about that birth experience. And even though I know it and I try to fight it, I associate it with that child. And the second one was so much fun and so good. And that child has always been an easy child. And, you know, so when you think about how you choose to give birth, if you're, you know, a woman doing it, or how you choose to help it, if you're a doula or a midwife or a doctor, you need to really know it's not just this moment that's being affected. It's relationships and a life that's being affected.
We're talking this morning with Helen Sterk, Professor of Communication Arts and Sciences at Calvin College, about gender and communication and birthing stories of women, and welcome your questions. If you want to tell your own story, that's fine too. You can call us around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll free anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. You write about, in the circumstance of many women, the moving train of hospital protocols. That,
it's
you
a
know,
good word.
Well,
good
yeah, it seemed like a good metaphor to me, too, because, yeah, you're you know, in this hospital environment, and as you say, it's a, you know, very protocol-based, you know, system.
Yes. Well, I can tell another story that really illustrates that well. Mm. I interviewed a woman who was 46, and she had her baby with her, three-week-old baby. And her birth was, I'd have to say, the most striking of any birth story that I heard. Okay, so she's 46. And by anybody's estimation, she's a pretty old first-time mother. She had had four pregnancies, none of which had developed very far. She'd lost them all very early on. And so with this pregnancy, she didn't allow herself to become emotionally involved with the baby inside of her until it was almost ready to be born, because she was so afraid it wasn't going to happen. So emotionally, she'd been holding back. But then as the time came to give birth, she started to be more and more involved with that baby, more and more in love with that baby. Well, she went to her hospital, and her doctor had just gone to a conference. So her own doctor was not at the hospital. There was a young doctor who had not been trained in extraordinary vaginal delivery. He had been trained to go directly to cesarean if there are any issues like breech births. Okay, and the other doctor who was there was an older doctor who was ready to retire and was very concerned about malpractice suits. Okay, so these are the two people who are there for her. Her own doctor is about 45 minutes away, luckily, at a conference. Okay, so she goes in. She's in labor. As soon as she steps into the hospital, she steps into the hospital protocol. That's just part and parcel of it. If you as a woman want to control your birth and hospital situation is your only situation, just stay at home until you are ready to roll, okay? So anyway, she'd gone in fairly early in her labor, as many first-time moms do, because you're so concerned about things. And it turned out her baby was breech. And I think it was completely upside down, so the bottom first, breech. And she wanted to have that baby vaginally and not cesarean delivery. And anyone listening to her story would think she was being irrational and that she was putting her baby at risk. She said over and over again, she was quoting herself, and she's like talking to her husband. He said, how do you know this is safe, honey? She goes, I don't know how I know. I just know. And she said, I kept thinking that and saying that over and over again. I don't know how I know. I just know. She had such an extreme intuitive trust in her own body. It's quite unlike most women I talk to. And she maintained all the way through that she was going to go cesarean. So the younger doctor said, I'm not going to deliver this baby vaginally. I don't know how. I just won't. You must do the protocol of the hospital. And she said, I won't. And she fired him. I never heard of him. She's like close to delivery. She fires her doctor. She says, get out of this room. You are not supporting me, so I am not going to even have you as my doctor. She kicked him out. And then she and her husband called around to other hospitals, and no one would take her. Okay, because she was in active labor, and she was a breech, and they said, no way, you are staying there, and you're going to have a baby there. And the older doctor refused to do a regular delivery with her, too, even though he knew how to do it, because he just didn't want that malpractice suit. So the nurses are starting to bring some pressure to bear on her as well, that what she's doing is putting her baby at risk. And she finally got the older doctor to call her own doctor, got hold of her, and her doctor then drove up and delivered the baby vaginally. It was difficult, but ended up being very healthy. And the person I interviewed said that after the baby was born, the postnatal nurses, the baby nurses, came to her and told her how wrong she had been going against hospital protocols, and that she had put her baby at risk and put the hospital at risk, and how dare she do that. And I was very struck by her strength of will and character, that she was on the moving train, but she had her foot down trying to drag and slow it down. It takes an extraordinary act of will to make that happen.
One of the things that you said, and that she said, she didn't know how she knew. She just knew this intuitive knowledge of her circumstance, her body, and what was happening. It seems that that kind of intuitive knowledge is discounted so much.
Yes.
That this is just, well, you can't possibly know that. We know better than you do.
Well, especially if you've never given birth.
Yeah.
And I found this a very interesting kind of theme in women's stories. Some women had a very strong intuitive sense of their own ability to bring a baby into the world, whether they'd given birth or not. Some women did not. One of the women I interviewed told me that she wanted the doctors to knock her out as soon as she got in the hospital and to wake her up when the baby was out. And she didn't want to know anything about it. She didn't want to be involved in it at all.
I've heard people say that, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought that, really, before I had a baby myself, okay? But since doing these interviews, hearing these stories and having my own children, I think it's a tremendous loss to a deep human experience if a woman turns over that experience to someone else. And if she doesn't allow herself to say, how is this going for me? What can I do? What is this like? So the women who have that intuitive sense, boy, I applaud them. There was one. Can I tell another one?
Sure.
This one just cracks me up. And it's also in this chapter that you've got in front of you. There was a group of lay midwives who I interviewed in New Jersey. And it's, again, one of those like snowball effect deals. I somehow, through internet contacts, got hold of one. And then she organized a whole structure of interviews of 10 or 11 women in her home in one day. Mm. Oh, my word. That was a day, I'll tell you. And these women were actually illegal midwives, because in New Jersey, you have to be a nurse practitioner in order to be, or not a nurse practitioner, but a trained nurse midwife.
Mm-hmm.
And go through the whole nursing thing. They didn't want to do that. They wanted to just birth babies. That was it. So they had a set of protocols and standards and training. And part of the training was they had to catch a number of babies. I love that term. I think they had to catch 3 babies or so in order to be able to do it on their own.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So she gets pregnant. And she decides that she will be kind of the guinea pig for the lay midwives in training. There were a number of them. And so when she went into labor, this was like her third child, she called, you know, the calling tree. She called the first person on the tree and said, I'm in labor. You can bring a bunch of the midwives and they can all catch. And there you are. So she's home alone with her husband. And her husband lives with a midwife. So he knows, you know, what needs to be done. And so she sent him off to get the pan and the hot water and the cloths and everything. And she felt a very, very strong contraction. And she says she lowered herself onto a beanbag chair. And she felt another very strong contraction. And she sort of says that her consciousness went sort of into herself. And her baby was born while her husband was still looking for the buckets and and the cloths. And she birthed that baby all by herself. Then she said her only regret was, of course, the other midwives didn't get a chance to catch, and so they didn't get to count that as one of their training births. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the woman before, the 46-year-old woman who was in the hospital and so resistant to hospital protocols, and this woman, I have such deep respect for, because they trusted their bodies. And I don't think people in general, at least in America, are taught to trust their intuitions about their bodies. They're taught to sort of turn that over to an expert who will tell them what their body is doing.
We're talking this morning with Helen Sterk. We're almost at our midpoint already. She's professor of communication arts and sciences at Calvin College, and she led this project called the Birthing Project we've been discussing, which is very interesting in what it reveals about medical care and the birthing experience. And we're talking about that, and welcome your questions as well, your own experiences, perspectives. If you want to join us around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. I think it's very, very interesting. One thing that struck me in reading about this, the word patient is a very interesting word.
Yeah.
I suppose it means you're supposed to be patient while the doctor, while something is done to you.
I think midwives, at least the ones that I interviewed, use the word client.
Yeah.
That and not patient. Because patient is someone you can do things to. A client is someone who's paying you for a service and is a partner with you. And I think that that's a very interesting distinction. In the chapter, I talk about Talcott Parsons' explanation of what it means to be a patient. This is not a new idea. This is like 1951, I think this is articulated. He said, this is what it means to be a patient when you're in a hospital. You're exempt from normal social responsibilities. You're exempt from being responsible for your own sickness. You're motivated to get well as soon as possible. And you're expected to cooperate with the medical help. So all of those things, I think, are very interesting. They conflate with the traditional gender role. And I think women who buy into a very traditional gender role where they don't trust themselves, it's just exacerbated. And say, well, the doctor knows best. So if the doctor tells me I need an epidural, I'll get one. If the doctor tells me I need a shot for pain, I'll take it. Instead of saying, like a midwife would say, well, where are you now and what's going on with you now? You know, we haven't talked about doulas yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's make sure to do that. We have a caller waiting,
great.
So why don't we talk with them and we'll continue. This is a caller from Normal, Illinois, line number 4. Good morning.
Hi.
Yes.
I'm glad to hear that someone has done this because my daughter's birth story, I felt was really special to us or traumatic in a lot of ways because, well, I was 42 and my daughter, we took a long time and I pushed and pushed for 7 hours and then finally I had a cesarean, but the doctor didn't give up on me until I finally said, why won't this baby come out? But I just felt like my daughter and I are real close because of this extraordinary circumstance, and I think it is important to have this, and I'm glad that you have written a book about it, and mm-hmm. and people have shared this, and I'd like to see your read your book.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great. You know, what I love about your story is how you talk about the doctor listening to you and cueing off of you.
Uh-huh.
How old is your child now?
She's 8.
Okay, well, that's very good.
And the doctor, see, I had to fire, well, I quit the first doctor because he wasn't going to go with my birth plan or what we had wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And I finally found a doctor that was willing to do that. And, yeah, he wasn't willing. He let me go for 7 hours. And then finally, when I gave up, he gave up that it was time. So. Well, thank you. I enjoy your program.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call. Well, let's talk about doulas and this thing the caller mentioned, a birth plan, because and I shared with you before we started that I have two children, and in the second birth, my wife and I had a doula, and it was a completely wonderful experience. Not to say the first wasn't, because we were lucky that, you know, at the time, and I think still now, Carl Hospital, where we had our children, had four nurse midwives, and they were wonderful people. I mean, they were of this model of caring for the mother, and not just, you know, the mother is there just to deliver a baby. Yeah. That's all. That's her only role, is to deliver the baby. And she's kind of superfluous as the baby is the thing. Anyway, the second time around, we had a birth plan, and we decided at what point, you know, intervention, we would allow whatever intervention, you know, thought things out in advance, and that seemed to help a great deal.
Yeah. Two quick comments on that. First is, it's good to hear that your birth plan was honored. I've heard of many more situations where the birth plan wasn't even there at the hospital, that women were asked to write up a birth plan and they were told it was going to be there waiting for them. And the nurses go, what are you talking about? What birth plan? So I'm glad yours was honored. And secondly, let's talk a little bit about what a doula is.
Yeah,
because
sure.
I'll bet you there's people listening who don't know. Why don't you describe what your doula did?
Well, you know, she described herself as a birth coach in some ways, and someone there to care for the mother. She's there to care for the mother, basically, to help the mother fulfill her birthing experience. And with the idea that, you know, women know how to give birth. I mean, we've been doing it for, what, 3 million years as Homo sapiens at least. And, you know, sure, it's great to have doctors and nurses and hospitals and facilities and things. But, you know, the overall experience is very important, profound and deep and rich and vital to a human being.
Well, what I love about doulas is that they're not necessarily trained. There have been studies done on doulas who were just women taken kind of almost off the street, whose only experience was that they themselves had given birth. And then they just stood by a woman and helped her and talked her through. And a doula doesn't replace a partner. And I think that's an important thing. Sometimes people in places where doulas are not a normal practice will say, well, the husband does that job. But, you know, a husband supports his wife and knows his wife and loves his wife, and that's a great thing. But he doesn't know birth, and a doula knows birth. And the research that's been done on doulas says that one of the things that they do is that they have their hand on the woman in some way, shape, or form for almost 95% of the time they're with her. And to me, that was just striking, that there is something about touch that can calm and relax and release. And there's also something about someone who's given birth who can say, you'll make it. You're going to make it through. You know, what's really funny is women who are in what they call transition, which is the moment just before the baby really comes out, often will want to give up as if you can. And you say, well, I'm going home now.
I changed my mind.
I don't want to do this anymore. And it's at a moment like that that the doula, I think, is very helpful, because a husband might go, what on earth is she thinking? And a doula knows exactly what she's thinking and feeling and can help her through it.
We have several callers. Let's go ahead and talk with them. Someone next in Ashmore, line number 4. Good morning.
Hello.
Yeah.
My experience, or our experience, was that our fourth child was a spontaneous delivery at home. And were I to do it over again, I would have liked to have had all of our children at home. It was a wonderful experience. The people who loved us most were there. And it was just, a shining time.
Isn't that a great word, a shining time? I love it. And, you know, people who've given birth at home tend to be extremely happy with that situation, even unplanned, spontaneous births at home. Yeah, often those are the most healthy. I mean, the fact that it comes so quickly and so fast means that things are going right.
Oh, exactly. Well, yeah. I happen to be a retired registered nurse, my husband a veterinarian, so it all went very well.
Good.
Thank you.
Thanks for
so
sharing.
Yeah, thanks for the call. We have a couple callers waiting. Let me just mention again, we're talking during this hour, Focus 580, with Helen Sterk, Professor of Communication Arts and Sciences at Calvin College. And she's here at the University of Illinois to give some lectures and talk with people, including us. And if you want to join our conversation, we're talking about the birthing experience and about gender and communication. The number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-9455. An Urbana listener next, line number one. Good morning.
Hi. WILL-TV had an independent movie. I don't remember if it was on Point of View or what it was, but it was called Doula, and it's about a doula program in Chicago where the emphasis is on finding and helping teenage mothers, low-income teenage mothers, who are likely to be particularly afraid and have no idea that such a thing as a doula or midwife program might exist. And it was remarkable watching this woman. She didn't only coach the woman through childbirth. She did a lot of education ahead of time. Mm. She did a lot of support and follow-up on parenting. Mm-hmm. She did a lot of support with breastfeeding, and she knew that some of these young women were going to have their partners tell them or discourage them from breastfeeding because the partners would be jealous and they would say, "That's mine." Things like that. It was just really remarkable to watch her doing this. And apparently one can buy the video. I didn't happen to write down how one does this, but it's probably available on the Internet or through WILL, I would imagine. There was something else I was going to say. Oh, a friend gave birth earlier this year and had problems breastfeeding and felt like a failure because she did. And I think that we should all remember that sometimes things don't go right and it's not a competition among women to have the best birth experience possible. Sometimes things do become difficult, and the point is to have a healthy child in the end. Mm-hmm. And so we shouldn't think of it as the Olympics of childbirth or breastfeeding. And it's hard not to when your body doesn't cooperate.
Right.
You know, and when you really want to do this because you know that it's really a good way to do things. Anyway, thanks a bunch.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah, I think a couple of things sort of stand out in what the caller just said. And one is the role of anxiety in holding someone back from having a good birth experience and a good breastfeeding experience. And I think the high-touch, low-tech approach of a doula, of a lactation consultant, of La Leche League, of all of these support things is really so important for a woman to connect into. You don't have to be alone, and you don't have to just listen to a doctor. A lot of times other women and other groups can be very supportive.
Well, and also, you know, as far as breastfeeding is concerned, having a supportive community, both in terms of a partner, but also it seems that a lot of people are upset, you know, when a woman breastfeeds her baby in public places. I mean, there's no reason why, you know, this is something that should be a problem.
Yeah. You know, once I was in a mall and with my baby and there was no place really to go. I couldn't find a private spot. So I sat in a bench off in a corner and I had my whole front covered with a blanket.
Right.
All right. Nothing was showing, not even the baby, but it was pretty clear that it was a baby underneath there nursing. I had a man stop and just tell me he thought what I was doing was obscene. I thought, no, it's really not. And I'm not showing you any part of my body at all. It's just that, you know, that this is being done.
Well, we have several callers to talk with. Let's go next to someone on a car phone, line number two. Good morning.
Hi, I just want to raise a cautionary note. My niece had a baby when she was in her, I guess, early 20s, and she was actually taking, she called it midwifery. Of course, she wanted to become a professional midwife, and her mother, who was on this trained midwives, and the entire pregnancy went fine, and the birth went fine, but they found out that the baby was born with a collapsed heart chamber, and also with very big necrotic regions in the brain, where there had obviously been some sort of infection. Mm. And they were lucky enough, and the midwives were knowledgeable, to get her to the Vanderbilt hospital, and they were able to save the baby. What I wanted to make as a cautionary note was that there are some people, and I don't want to put them in, maybe I put them in the class of those people who practice beyond their competence, mm-hmm. sort of, you know, chiropractors who are, you know, curing colds by bone manipulation. And because she wanted a natural experience, and with the encouragement of her mother and the midwives, she never had a doctor examine her during the entire pregnancy. And there was no indication that there was anything wrong. But the doctors have since told her that at least some of the problems have been seen if she had had, you know, proper medical testing during prior to a birthing process. So that when people use, so what I'm really pointing out is that because you're using a midwife and you're doing natural childbirth, doesn't mean that you want to leave medical profession and the tools of modern medicine out during the pregnancy that precedes the birth. I think that's really important to let the people do what they can do and let other people do what they can do. Mm-hmm. So I just want to point that out. Thank mm-hmm. you.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, you know, nothing that you've said is to bash medicine or science or doctors, right? I mean, you know, I think that... in fact, many of your stories were of doctors who approached the birthing experience in the way that was, you know, focused on the mother.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't discount the importance of diagnosis of problems. And in fact, midwives are very careful about who they accept and they see through to the end of something. And many midwives will refer people out for ultrasounds or for amniocentesis, for that kind of testing ahead of time. If I were to have a child now, knowing what I do after all of these interviews, I would choose to give birth in a place very close to a hospital, not actually in a hospital, although I understand here in Champaign-Urbana, you've got a very good situation of midwifery in the hospital. Mm-hmm. But close enough so that if there is a problem with the baby after it's born, it could be treated and seen immediately. I think that's important.
We have several callers waiting. We'll go next to someone on line number 3 in Urbana. Good morning.
Good morning. You kind of just answered my question, but I was wondering if you could give any advice for women who are pregnant now for the best birthing experience possible. I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay.
If I were you, I would seek out either a midwife or a doctor who has very much of a midwifery orientation, meaning somebody who will work with you, if you are the pregnant person, and help you to see yourself as strong and capable and able to bring a baby into the world. Going through it will help you develop a stronger sense of self and I think be a character-enhancing experience for you.
Hope that gets to the question. We'll go next to someone in Champaign County, line number 2. Good morning.
Hi. Away from the birthing experience and more about the gender issues and women in medicine, I just Amazoned this book that I remember reading in the early, mid-70s, Witches, Midwives, and Nurses, A History of Women Healers, Barbara Ehrenreich.
Yeah, Ehrenreich in English, right?
Yeah. And I found it very amazing read at that time because it ties, you know, the burning of witches with the domination of the Celtic peoples. And I remember the copy I have and still have somewhere is there's this picture of these iron tongs that, you know, were used by men to help birth, which is grotesque. I mean, they look sort of like a torture implement. But I wonder whether you can talk sort of something about the insights from that book from 1972. It's actually available new. It's been republished, and it's available on Amazon. So I recommend it. And I'm actually too tired now to engage, so I'll just listen and see how you react.
Well, say the title one more time.
It's called Witches, Midwives, and Nurses, A History of Women Healers, and it's from Glass Mountain Pamphlets. It's actually a short read. I thought it was also changed into a bigger book, which I can't find the title to.
I think it's For Her Own Good.
For Her Own Good, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that some of the material in Witches, Midwives, and Nurses was adapted for that book, but it's also available in the original form.
Yeah, both of those are great. Yeah, Erin Reich is Ehrenreich. If you're going to go and take a look at that, Erin Reich in English. Yeah, I'm familiar with both of those books. More so with For Her Own Good, which is a history of how women have been treated by the medical profession over the years. And pretty much, I love the argument of that book. It says every moment of a woman's life has been defined as an illness, so that it can be exploited by medical practitioners. If you're menstruating, you're ill. If you're not menstruating, you're ill. If you're pregnant, you're ill. If you're not pregnant, you're ill. If you're in menopause, you're ill. If you're not in menopause, you're ill. You kind of see how that whole trajectory goes. Yeah, women who were midwives who had knowledge seemed to be magical in early days. And maybe you recall the story of Anne Hutchinson in the very early English colonies, who was expelled from her colony, named as a witch because of her midwifing several deformed babies and bringing them into the world. So instead of seeing that might be an issue that happened naturally, it was seen as an issue of her doing. Very interesting gender conflation there.
We have just about a little less than 10 minutes left with our guest, Helen Sterk, professor of communication arts and sciences at Calvin College. We're talking about the birthing stories of women and gender and communication and a variety of issues that pertain. If you want to talk with us in the time remaining, I'll mention the phone numbers one more time, 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. A line that I kind of extracted from your chapter on this, when women give birth in hospitals, not only are they patients, but they are women.
Yep.
I mean, it's that's a good way to put it, it seems.
Yeah, I think that women in the healthcare system are at a kind of disadvantage because the gender role that women at least traditionally have been socialized into as one of acceptance of what's being done to them, doesn't serve us, does not serve us. It's not a good way to be. And I think that there's so much going on now in health communication and in health care that we are being taught to be advocates for ourselves, and we are taught not just to accept what's being done. I have a daughter with lupus and a son who has extreme migraines, and I'm in and out of the medical care system a lot. And this becomes more and more clear to me as the years go by that people who allow things to be done to them without doing their research and finding out everything that they possibly can about the situation are at a disadvantage.
We have a couple callers waiting. We'll go next to an Urbana listener, line number one. Good morning.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
Hello?
Yes.
I have a friend who's male who is very convinced, that the doctors always know the best. And I'm trying to actually convince him that natural childbirth is much more likely to be, that it's an option. And he's convinced that, no, you go in and you have the pain taken away type thing. Do you have any suggestions for readings for the men?
Well, I'd actually suggest my book, Who's Having This Baby? And especially the very last chapter where I sort of sum up what my advice would be to women. And just two small pieces of advice. One is this whole idea of natural childbirth being dangerous. The most reliable statistics say that 85% of the births that happen are unproblematic. And they call them uneventful in medical terminology, but we know they're quite eventful. Bring a baby into the world. So that's the vast majority of births are not ones that are problematic, and just remember that. Secondly, interesting research about pain. If people are runners, I think they can connect with this. If you run long distances, endorphins get released into your system, and it's kind of like a natural morphine. Okay, they've found with women who are giving birth that if they experience the pain, and I'm not sugarcoating, it's not discomfort, it's pain. If they experience the pain, that endorphins are released, and given that everything else goes relatively smoothly, it increases the speed at which you recuperate. And if you don't allow yourself to go through it, you are groggy and from the drugs, and you will recuperate faster, if you let yourself feel the pain.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks for the call. One of the women in that you relay in the chapter used the metaphor of like a toboggan ride or something, or like a, you know, something like that, that, you know, you start down this, there's no turning back, and you just have to go with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we have another caller in Urbana, line number 2. Good morning.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Yeah. Thanks for a great show. Tuned in real late here, but I just want to say that I totally advocate everything that I've heard you talk about. I witnessed the miracle of a twin birth at my home about 22 months ago.
Oh, wow.
And totally natural. My daughter required no drugs. We had 2 doulas and 2 midwives. And it was one of the most blessingful sort of times I've ever had, and I think I ever will experience. And so, you know, as you sort through gender roles and, you know, all the things you've talked about, what's taken away from women, you know, men need to realize that, you know, things are being taken away from them too.
Yes.
And certainly the experience I had was one that I will never forget, and really bonded me to not only the, there were 2 boy twins, to the boys, but also to my stepdaughter. And, you know, it's just a wonderful time for us all, and I have to hang up. Thank you. Aww.
Thank you for the call.
What a great story. And you're right. It is a blessing to the people who are able to be there during the birth, to be supportive to the woman and to realize how much it takes to bring a new little person into the world. You gain respect for the person and a deep sense of gratitude that she was willing to do this to bring somebody else here.
We just have about a couple minutes left. One of the things that you also argue in this book is that in addition to all the other things about, you know, sort of women not being able to be respected as someone, it's, you know, the birthing process in the medical model is seen all about the mother is simply the necessary means to the end of a healthy baby.
Yeah.
But also that medical personnel lose the valuable insights they might gain from listening to women explaining their own experiences.
Yeah. One of the people who helped me write this book is the director of the midwifery program at Marquette University, and her research was on the nurses who are support persons during labor and delivery. And what she found is that the learning from observation of women going through birth and talking with them about what it means to them is so crucial to a caregiver, to nurses, you know, I would say to doctors, midwives as well, because you are human. And this is the moment when you're, I think, most fully human. You are very vulnerable. You're literally open as a person, and it should be a moment that is honored. And communication, listening, talking—that's an honoring.
Well, we're just about at the point we're going to have to stop. I suppose we should recommend the title of the book again for folks if you want to read more. I have it here somewhere. Would you like to?
Who's having this baby? Perspectives on birthing.
Okay. It was published by the Michigan State University Press in 2002. And again, our guest, Helen Sterk, professor of communication arts and sciences at Calvin College. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.